regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Comedy. My name is Cam Edwards. Right with me on the program today, we're going to be talking with our friend and contributor at Bearing Arms, John Petrolino, here in just a second or two. John had a story the other day that is really concerning. John focuses a lot on what's going on in New Jersey, and unfortunately there is always a lot to focus on in the Garden State when it comes to gun control. The latest, the Attorney General in New Jersey, Matt Plotkin, going after a gun store for its sales of ammunition and a magazine, sales that were conducted within the confines of the law, except that New Jersey has this very vague law on the books that says that FFLs apparently should go above and beyond what is required in statute under both state and federal law when they are selling firearm-related products. Now, this gun store wasn't charged criminally, and the operators of this gun store weren't charged criminally. This was a civil suit, which again comes with, you know, a hefty price tag, not only if you are found liable, but also simply the attorney's fees, right? So this is another way for anti-gunners right now in the state of New Jersey, but I'm really concerned that this is going to spread beyond the confines of the Garden State. It's another way for the anti-gunners to go after and choke off the lawful commerce in arms. And Plotkin is being very aggressive right now in doing this. And I suspect, again, that we will see other anti-gun AGs across the country take a page out of Plotkin's book, be anti-gun lawmakers as well, and other blue states, and empower these anti-gun AGs to sue FFLs, again, over lawful sales of firearm-related products. Take a look and a listen.
John, thanks so much for coming on the program. Glad to see you got the memo about the black t-shirts, by the way. That's that is not the the dress code for Bearing Arms, I promise. But
absolutely, Cam. Thank you so much for the invite. It's a pleasure to be talking with you today.
Mario the Rooster is very happy that you're here as well. So I want to talk about the last piece that you wrote for Bearing Arms, because this is troubling enough in New Jersey, but I don't think it's going to stay here. Right. I think we're looking at what Matt Plotkin is doing, probably being exported to other blue states as well. So he announced a settlement with a gun store in the Garden State recently, right?
Well, there was a settlement, and then there was also an order in court. So Butch's Gun World, I think is what it's called, is the gun shop that they didn't settle. They refused to settle. But there was another dealer that did settle. So he's gone after a whole bunch of people and a bunch of different gun shops. And there was one that was broken into, and, you know, a bunch of guns got stolen. And he said that, you know, this fell under this obscure law that they wrote. And what I want to, and I don't want to like blow the whole entire spoiler alert here, but the way I'm looking at this is, they are very calculated by doing all of this stuff through civil proceedings. And it's just like with the red flag seizure orders. Now, if it's civil, what are you not afforded?
Right. You know, yeah, you have no right to an attorney. Not one that's provided to you if you can't afford one, right? If you can hire counsel, that's great. But if not, you're on your own.
Right. All of your criminal protections are completely out the window. You can't plead the Fifth Amendment. You can't. And that's, you know, that's how O.J. Simpson got hung up, because he had to testify in the civil proceedings. Right. So this is the exact same tactic. This is they're now using the civil procedures. So this is a law that they're saying basically akin to, well, this wasn't responsible selling, but the actual statute in the law that requires you. So they got hung up for selling 1,000 rounds of long gun ammunition, right? And a magazine. I think the first thing that they sold something else, maybe a box of ammo. Then the second thing that they sold, and this was to controlled buyers, undercover buyers that the attorney general sent out to do this sting operation. And 1,000 rounds of ammo, which is meaningless. They picked that number because they wanted a number, right? That's like, it's 1,000 rounds. And you saw the quote that Plackett said, 1,000 rounds that's used in mass shootings. And it's all about optics and a magazine. And they're complaining that the gun store didn't prove that the buyers weren't prohibited persons. But under New Jersey law, in order to buy a bunch of rifle ammunition, all you need is basically a driver's license just to prove your age, that you're above the age of 18.
Right. That's what people, I just want to interject here. Man, this is what is so troubling, is that this gun shop did not break federal law. It did not break New Jersey law in terms of how it sold this ammunition, how it sold this magazine. What Plackett is arguing, and again, the fact that he's using undercover agents to go out and essentially entrap these gun stores, they go out, a legal sale is made, then Plackett sues the gun store saying, they didn't do their due diligence, right? Even though they abided by the letter of the law, they still somehow have a requirement to do their due diligence, that the person that they're selling to is not a prohibited person, even though, as you say, you don't need to pass a background check. You don't even need to show your firearms ID card in order to purchase ammunition in New Jersey, right? Not under the law.
Not for long gun ammunition, because I had somebody, you know, don't read the comments, but I got a friend, he's from Australia, and he's a new gun owner, new citizen, congratulations, welcome. But, you know, he's got certain biases. But he's a gun guy, and he's like, well, I always have to show my FID card when I buy ammo, and maybe online, I'm thinking, or even in the stores. But that's if you're buying handgun ammunition. In the state of New Jersey, you show the FID card or a permit to carry or a pistol purchaser's permit, which I don't even know where you're going to get that now because it's all electronic. And that's what you need to show to get pistol ammunition. Pistol ammunition is recorded and it's logged. It's registered. If you buy over, I think, 1,000 rounds, the state police get a memo that this person bought over 1,000 rounds. I think there's also a background check fee, or there's just another, an additional, like a registration fee for your ammo purchases. So, you know, handgun, but this was rifle ammunition. So, like, what are you trying to do here? You know, because it's not the law. And I even put links to that in the article showing where it says in the law, this is what you need to do. Even more troubling, forget the ammunition, Cam, and forget that felons are not allowed to have ammo. As we know, a magazine, they're saying that all of these gun-related parts and accessories, magazines, maybe even an upper frame, like the list goes on and on and on, and it's very troubling. And that's something that the NSSF pointed out, is, you know, this is an exhaustive list of things that we don't really know what qualifies. Is it going to be a screw that's a, you know, a special panhead screw? I don't know, you know. So that's the biggest issue. Magazines, like, forget it. That's not a law anywhere, I don't think.
I think that you're right. And again, how do you, you know, there is no exhaustive list, right? It's basically up to the attorney general to argue after the fact that, aha, this person, you know, didn't go far enough in exercising reasonable controls, right? Well, again, that's an arbitrary term. What is reasonable for somebody to do? It's going to be up to a judge to decide. So, I mean, essentially, every sale that is made in New Jersey, these FFLs have to be looking over their shoulder wondering, okay, I know I followed the letter of the law, but is that going to be enough for the anti-gun attorney general, or is he going to try to sue me out of existence?
Does this mean if I buy gun oil, you know, if I buy aerosol gun, does this mean if I'm a fisherman that, you know, needs to just get oil for his fishing reel, never owned a gun ever, and they said, hey, why don't you try this? This is a good gun oil. Check that. It works perfect on my reels. Oh, where do I get it? Oh, you could get it at XYZ Guns. All right, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to buy this gun oil for my fishing reel. Is that going to qualify? I don't know, Cam. You know, and that's, you know, maybe I'm giving them ideas. I don't know, you know, but
something tells me that Matt Plackin's not watching this podcast, but I mean, I hope he is. I hope he is.
Maybe he is.
Because I know you're one of his favorites.
I made him big mad the last time that we spoke. And that was, yeah, I'm definitely one of his favorites for sure. But what is going to qualify? Is it going to be down that far? Oil, gun cases. So, you know, where is the line going to be drawn? And now people are freaking out, as they should be, and saying that, you know, well, we got to proof everybody on everything now. So now what does that mean if, you know, it's a holidays time and a spouse or a boyfriend or a girlfriend wants to buy a gift, say, hey, you know what? I remember they wanted one of those Upulas. I'm going to go in there and get an Upula. Those snap caps will be great too. Are snap caps going to be something to be regulated? I don't know. And the one thing, though, that I thought was very interesting, and I emphasis added in the quotations from the order, is the judge was clear that we're not talking about whether or not this is, you know, constitutionally vague or anything like that. The judge was just following the New Jersey statute as it was, and Butch's is just trying to fight this by saying, hey, we followed the law. And he's like, well, according to this civil law, which I call a non-law, because it's not really a law, you know, you're saying it's, you know, it's from the ether. You know, is that going to be, you know, something that qualifies it? I don't know, you know. So the other problem is that they have to record all of this stuff now. So now they have to write down every single transaction and relate that to the police. So if there's going to be a facial challenge to this, eventually, I hope there will be. I mean, NSSF does have their challenge to the Glock, you know, situation, also using the same public nuisance law, because they reinvigorated that because it got scuttled because they didn't have standing because nobody was injured yet. But now that there's somebody injured, NSSF stepped in. So they're challenging that statute. But where is it going to be? Because the Glock situation is a bit different than this situation. This has to do with actual sales in the state. I hope Butch's, you know, completely goes to the mattresses on this and, you know, does do a facial challenge to go into what that judge was saying, you know, hey, you know, we're not talking about that. We're talking about this.
Right. That was maybe the one, maybe even a you know, kind of a signal flare from the judge about, okay, you know, if you do want to challenge this, here's the way to go about it. Right. And I hope that you're right. I hope that Butch's does challenge this because, although sadly, if it's not Butch's, there's going to be another gun shop in New Jersey who gets stung the same way by the attorney general because of this vague law that, again, you know, requires any gun related product. Right. You got to have procedures and practices that are reasonably designed to prevent the sale or distribution of any gun-related product to a person prohibited from possessing a firearm under state or federal law. They don't define reasonable practices. That is, essentially, that's up to you, right, to determine what is reasonable. And if Platkin disagrees, he'll take you to court. He'll let a judge sort it out.
Yeah, no, it's insane. And what we need is basically like a state level NSSF chapter to step in and say, all right, everybody, let's get on the same page. Let's bring this together. This is what we're going to do. Is this going to satisfy you, Your Highness? You know, Lord Farquhar, are you happy, you know, if we do this? And that's almost like what needs to happen. And that's not my idea. That's somebody else's idea. I stole it from them. So, but that's what needs to happen, you know, yeah. Really.
Yeah. And in the meantime, you know, again, I suspect that you're going to see, if we're not already seeing this kind of fly under the radar, but, you know, Letitia James in New York, Rob Bonta in California, Andrea Campbell in Massachusetts. I mean, there's a laundry list of anti-gun attorneys general around the country who I think would be more than happy to borrow what Platkin has done here. Of course, you know, again, you've got to have legislators pass a statute that is this vague and fuzzy, but I don't think that's going to be a problem in places like Massachusetts or California or New York either. So this isn't something that's just going to be confined to the Garden State. I mean, I think this is if it's a strategy that's paying off in New Jersey, the gun control lobby is going to try to export it elsewhere, right?
Oh, absolutely. And the one thing that we have on our side in New Jersey is we're in the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. The temperature has changed there. We have a more favorable court where, you know, Third Circuit used to be more business oriented because of Delaware. But now this is going to be the gun the gun place, New Jersey in particular, and Joe Laporto from the New Jersey Firearms Owner Syndicate, he made this prediction months ago. He said to me, he said, John, he said, it's going to be the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. You watch. He said, that's where all of the cases are going to start to go. And he was right. And as you know, the interview that I did with Joe Greenlee doubled down and said, absolutely. And you could see FPC's moving stuff in New Jersey, SAF, NRA, everybody. GOA has worked with the Coalition of New Jersey Firearms Owners. Mm-hmm. Everybody is working together. All of the groups right now, almost all the groups are doing something in New Jersey right now. And New Jersey's, they got a big burden to fill because Third Circuit Court of Appeals, like even the 21, under 21 case in New Jersey, what are they going to do? Lara already decided some of this, you know? Right. So what are we going
to
do?
Yeah, and you're right about that. I mean, the Third Circuit is not as hostile to the right to keep your arms as we have seen, certainly from other circuit courts. The Lara case, Range versus Garland was another big one. There was a case, I think, dealing with unlawful users of drugs that was not a great decision by the Third Circuit, although they even left the door open for as applied challenges. But you've got this perfect storm, right? Because you've got a court that seems to be taking the Second Amendment seriously. And in a state like New Jersey, you've got a state that has a lot of gun laws that need to be challenged in court. So, the Fifth Circuit's pretty conservative, but there are no states with assault weapon bans, right, in the Fifth Circuit or permitting laws, right? You've got pretty good gun laws in those states, so it's tough to bring a challenge to some of these things. The Third Circuit looks to be, pretty fertile ground. I'll say we're even seeing some improvement from the Ninth Circuit, like with the decision in Rody versus Botta.
That was huge. And you were talking about the Fifth Circuit. That was where Louisiana is, right? Louisiana's in the Fifth Circuit. That's why I was bummed when I was actually bummed that they came up with a legislative answer for their situation that they had with the out-of-state permits. I want to see these things litigated. And, I want to see the courts give us these decisions. So, like, those legislators kind of did us a disservice. But I got a text message this morning that said we got another confirmed judge last night in the Third Circuit. So right now, the Third Circuit Court of Appeals is 7-6, leaning right to center. And quite potentially, it's going to be 8-6 here shortly. So, that's the tea leaves.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, man, I always appreciate when we get a chance to publish your stories. And I got to mention, I wanted to put this in an editor's note to your story over the weekend, but I wasn't sure if we could talk about it publicly, so I held off. But I asked John, we can talk about it publicly. John is a finalist in the New Jersey chapter of the Society of Professional Journalism's annual awards, and not in one category, right? We've got four categories. Is that correct, John?
Yeah, it turned out to be four categories in the Metropolitan Division. And it's like, it says like CBS, it says all of these other, and then it says Bearing Arms. And I was like, there's us. There's like four categories out of five. I entered five, and like, this is a huge, it's an honor just to be a finalist. I feel great about it. And there's work in there that's, John Kabarakis, we talked about him. There's an article and an interview that John Kabarakis contributed to that's a finalist. And I have to give a hat tip out to the News 2A guys. They're the ones that connected me, Sean and Grant. They connected me with John Kabarakis for that story. Judy Franco from NJ1015, she was one of the articles. The Friends of the NRA dinner, that was one of the articles. And what else? All of the bias stuff. There's a lot of good bias reporting.
Yeah.
And permitting abuses. And I've really touched that my work is, being recognized by the professional journalists. Not that we're not professional journalists, but we kind of, fight uphill here, in what we're doing.
Yes, we do. I got summarily dismissed from a press call with Brady yesterday. They wouldn't let me in. I registered for the Zoom webinar. It was all good to go. And then, you're right. And even when you're not talking about gun control groups, right? I mean, we know the bias in the media. So to have that recognition, You know, there are, I mean, sadly, I hate to say it, but there are a lot of folks in the media who would look at where your stories were published. They would immediately say, well, that's not real journalism, or I'm not going to look at this. I don't like that point of view. So, you know, A, congratulations to you, but also B, congratulations to those journalists who, because this is peer reviewed, right? So congratulations to those journalists who kept an open mind, who looked and gave a fair assessment of your stories and thought, you know what, this is good enough to be award winning. So I, you know, that gives me a little bit of hope about the media. But it also makes me very, very proud of what you've accomplished, John, because, it, like I said, I'm always pleased when we get to have one of your stories. You are a fantastic journalist doing on the ground reporting. You do the digging. You're submitting the, you know, Freedom of Information Act requests. You're doing the interviews in person. So I'm glad to see some acknowledgement from your peers that that you are doing a very, very good job.
Well, I appreciate it, Cam, and a lot of thanks to you. You know, not to make this into a big fluff fest, but you've given me a lot over the years. You, Freddie, and Dan Zimmerman, you guys have been fabulous editors, so I owe you guys a lot. And, you know, you get the brunt of what I write, so you have to deal with me more than everyone else. So I appreciate you and your sage advice.
Well, listen, there is very little editing that I have to do to polish up the stuff that you give us. So again, I think this is all you and well-deserved. All right, John Petrolino, we'll let you get back to your day. I appreciate you carving out a few minutes for us, my friend. And you are one of the busiest guys I know as well. So I don't know when we'll get a chance to catch up in person, but I hope that it won't be before long.
We'll figure it out. Tata Damniak, there's going to be a hearing in Richmond coming up in 6 weeks or something like that. So we'll talk about that.
All right. Sounds good. John Petrolino, Bearing Arms contributor, joining us here on Bearing Arms, Cam and Company.
My thanks to John for joining me on the program today, for his coverage, and again, for his outstanding reporting at Bearing Arms and elsewhere, but primarily at Bearing Arms. All right. On to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day and our recidivist report. We will start there. You know, yesterday we talked about the armed citizen in Traverse City, Michigan, who helped to prevent this stabbing suspect from carrying out any further attacks, held him at gunpoint until police arrived. Now we're learning more about the suspect himself. Here's the headline. Suspect had decades-long mental health struggles, criminal history. Police said that they had been ordered to find the suspect only hours before this attack took place. Yeah. The man accused of this mass stabbing, according to a WXYZ in Michigan, appeared disheveled and confused Monday in court, asking a jail officer, "Do I have to do this?" moments before he was arraigned on charges of terrorism and assault with intent to murder. As the TV station reports, those are hardly the first criminal charges that have been brought against Bradford Gilley. The 42-year-old's criminal history is what they describe as a decades-long trail of misdemeanor and felony charges that tell a story of a life in a slow-motion spiral. Court records show that Gilley spent years struggling to seek mental health treatment. In 2005, he pleaded guilty to domestic violence in Emmett County, Michigan. He spent 93 days in confinement. 2006, pleaded guilty to third-degree retail fraud in Petoskey, Michigan. In 2008, pleaded guilty to aggravated domestic violence, this time spending a year behind bars. 4 years after that, he was convicted of assault. That was in Michigan. Now, also, Florida court records show that in 2014, Gilley was sentenced to 49 days in jail following a criminal mischief conviction. In 2016, Gilley was charged with felony destruction of tombs and disinterment and mutilation of dead bodies. According to WXYZ, Emmett County court records show that he was found not guilty by reason of insanity. The TV station says that Gilley's struggle with mental illness was so severe that he was featured in a 2007 article in the Petoskey News Review, where his mother said that her son, who was then 23, suffered from paranoid schizophrenia, fearing that he would never break out of the cycle of hospital stays and incarceration. She said, "He's fine when he's on his medication. The problem is his illness tells him that he's fine and he doesn't need to take his medication. He's also been through the mental health evaluation so many times that he knows how to answer their questions." Yeah, and now, again, facing charges related to the stabbing of 11 people, but assault with intent to murder, terrorism. So the question is not only whether the criminal justice system should have kept Gilly behind bars. By the way, he was given a $100,000 cash bond. It's pretty low, I got to say. He's due back in court on August the 12th. You also, though, do have to wonder about the mental health system. If this guy was at one point, and apparently at multiple points in his life, consumed by his mental illness to the point that he was found not guilty by reason of insanity for mutilating dead bodies less than 10 years ago. How much time did Gilly spend in a mental health institution? When was the last time Gilly was in a mental health institution? And when was he deemed sane enough to be released? If he was too mentally ill to stand trial on these charges, when did the state decide that he was not mentally ill enough to be confined to an institution? Don't know the answer to that question. But it is one that is worth asking, again, given this decades-long history of criminal convictions and acquittals by reason of insanity. Could this attack have been prevented simply by having a more robust criminal justice system and certainly a more robust mental health system? Not only in the state of Michigan, maybe the state of Florida as well. This is something that I think every state in the union is lacking. All right, on to today's armed citizen story from California, where a suspected burglar who was shot in Taft, California, has passed away from their injuries. This from Bakersfield Now. Now, the burglary itself took place a couple of weeks ago. I think it was July 14th. But the burglar did not pass away from his injuries until July 22nd, according to the Kern County Coroner's Office. It was just before 6 o'clock in the morning on July 14th. Deputies in Bakersfield arrived on reports of a burglary in progress. When they got there, they learned that the homeowner had confronted the alleged burglar in the backyard. During that encounter, Cortez allegedly charged at the homeowner while holding an unknown object, which prompted the homeowner to discharge his firearm, striking Cortez. He was subsequently airlifted to Kern Medical Center, where he remained in the intensive care unit until he passed away. He was booked in absentia into the Kern County Jail on suspicion of a first-degree burglary, as well as an outstanding misdemeanor warrant. The case, according to Bakersfield Now, has been submitted to the Kern County DA's office for review. But as of yesterday, no further updates have been provided. If this individual did again have a reasonable belief that his life was in danger, he had the ability, legally, even in California, to fire that shot in self-defense. But we'll keep our eyes open to see when that official determination is made. I suspect that the homeowner is not going to face any charges, but again, we'll give you any updates as they become available. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing able to do the right thing, a good Samaritan in Newton County, Georgia, who came to the aid of a elderly gentleman whose car caught fire, apparently. This from the Newton County Sheriff's Department, talking about this incident where a man's vehicle, now this was described as a residential fire, but they also talk about the man's vehicle actually catching fire. So I don't know that it's fair to call this a residential fire, but whatever. Whatever. This was apparently in Covington, Georgia. Deputy Shardell McFarlane, the first to arrive on scene, at least the first officer to arrive on scene. But there was a good Samaritan who was already there and who apparently was able to get this 65-year-old man out of his car and away from the flames before he could be injured. The Newton County Sheriff's Office says the quick action shows the everyday heroism of our deputies, many of whose stories go untold. They added that the agency wishes to express its sincere appreciation to Marcus Gaither, who was the first to arrive at the scene and provided quick, critical life-saving assistance until Deputy McFarland took over. With permission granted to release his name publicly, we acknowledge and commend his invaluable contribution to this case. So again, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing for a stranger in need, Marcus Gaither, here in Newton County, Georgia. We thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that has got to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam & Company. As always, want to thank you for being a part of the show. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow, where we will once again be talking about some of the big stories impacting our right to keep and bear arms. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com, though, throughout the day today. We are keeping you up to date on all kinds of stuff. Obviously, the latest calls for gun control in the wake of this shooting in Manhattan. We've got legal news for you out of the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. Actually, out of the Ninth Circuit, too, as a matter of fact. And not good news in either of those cases, but we'll report it all the same. And we've got more as well. So be sure to check out BearingArms.com. If you like what you see, would encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member. Use the promo code FIGHT when you sign up at BearingArms.com/subscribe, and you can get 60% off your membership. It's our way of saying thanks for showing your support, and we really do appreciate that support. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.